Easy Living Furniture's biggest ever roadshow sale is here. Come discover the amazing roadshow deals, such as all sofas reduced, all dining reduced, all bedroom reduced, all mattresses reduced, and with interest-free finance available. This is one sale not to be missed. The spectacular roadshow sale with absolutely everything reduced is now on at Easy Living Furniture. Don't miss out. Find your local store online at easylivingfurniture.ie.
Tired of spending all evening looking for something to watch? Introducing Sky Stream, the new way to get Sky without a dish, where all your shows from all your apps and channels are in one place. Stream unmissable Sky exclusives like True Detective and The Regime starring Kate Winslet, and Netflix shows like The Gentlemen, all in one simple bill for just €25 a month for 12 months. Search Sky Stream today. New customers only. 12-month minimum term. Requires broadband. The regime available 8th of April. Further terms apply.
If you like the Indo Daily, you can follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on the Indo Daily, murder in Odessa. The Irish priest, the Apache Native American, and the 41-year-old cold case. In 1981, a Limerick priest was found dead in a Texas motel just 4 days before Christmas.
The corner of 2nd and Belmont Street in Odessa, Texas, is where the Sand and Sage Motel once stood in December 1981. It was here that Father Patrick Ryan was found murdered in a hotel room.
Now, he was found naked, bound and beaten. And Father Patrick Ryan didn't stand a chance. He hailed from Doon in Limerick, and when an Apache Native American was jailed for his murder in 1983, it was assumed the case was closed.
But now the case is being reopened after Police Chief Mike Gerke is questioning some of the evidence used to convict an Odessa man.
But in a twist of events, new evidence has found that James Harry Reyes, the man accused, sentenced, and now free, is and always has been innocent.
A Texas court will now decide whether to hold a hearing on the new evidence while a cold case detective has been assigned to the case of Father Patrick Ryan.
The murder is once again a cold case. Reyes rightfully wants his name cleared, but the question still remains: who killed Father Patrick Ryan? I'm Siobhan Maguire, and joining me today to talk about this very tangled Texan murder mystery is Mike Hall, an executive editor at Texas Monthly. Mike, thank you so much for joining me today. Now, on this side of the pond, the story is being discussed at the moment because it involves the gruesome murder of an Irish priest. But at the heart of all of this is a man, an Apache Native American, who has been fighting to clear his name for 4 decades.
That's absolutely right. Yes, he's from a reservation in the northern part of New Mexico. His name is James Reyes.
James Harry Reyes. In 1983, he was convicted of this crime. But we might rewind a little bit back to 1981, Mike. And you have, you know, the case of this Catholic priest. And priests were revered in, you know, the state of Texas at that time. And he...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and he goes missing, Mike. And then what happens?
Well, the priest went missing a few days before Christmas. He didn't show up for Christmas Eve service. He was a beloved priest, by the way, in this Denver City, which is a little tiny town out in West Texas, out in the oil fields. He had a very Hispanic congregation, and Hispanics are mostly Catholic. So they were devoted to him. They adored him. He was a very caring, very compassionate guy. And he didn't show up for Christmas Eve services, so nobody knew where he was. And his body had been discovered a few days earlier, but they didn't identify him until after Christmas. And he was found in a shoddy West Texas motel where prostitutes and bad business was always happening, and they found his body there.
And, you know, of course, it's 1981, Mike, and people didn't have mobile phones or cell phones, as you would call them. And so there was no way of really making contact with Father Ryan or finding out what had happened to him. And then this, as you say, this unidentified body is discovered in a motel. And I went through some of the cuttings here in our national newspapers at the time. And they state Father Patrick Ryan, 50, was found nude, beaten and bound in a Texas motel 80 miles from the diocese where he worked.
Right. Yeah, he was found in Odessa, which is a relatively, I mean, it's a city, whereas his diocese was a tiny town called Denver City. So he was found, yes, pretty far from home, yes.
And then we have an investigation, naturally. And you had some details in your very well-written article in Texas Monthly that goes into quite a lot of detail as to why Father Ryan might have been in that particular motel room. Now, I don't have access to any of that information. So if you're comfortable telling me what you know, Mike, that would be great.
Well, apparently, I mean, the father was in the closet, as we say here in America, that he was gay, and he had a habit of picking up hitchhikers, men hitchhiking. This is how he first met James Reyes. He picked him up hitchhiking. James Reyes, the town of Denver City is close to the border with New Mexico, and James was a roustabout, which is a man who works in the oil fields, but he was unemployed, and he was going west across the border to Hobbs, which is a little town near Denver City, and he was picked up by Father Ryan. And apparently Father Ryan would pick up young men, and then, as he did with James, said, hey, let's go to a bar and talk. So they went to a bar and they hung out for several hours drinking beer and talking. And James was a lonely guy. He was in the closet as a homosexual, did not feel comfortable being a homosexual at all, and found he didn't have a lot of friends. And Father Ryan was this very compassionate, very caring man, and they wound up hanging out. And James thought he had a friend, and he actually saw Father Ryan several times over the next few weeks. And, you know, it ultimately wound up with them having a homosexual experience that James said was unwelcome. And that led to the very next day, Father Ryan was murdered. And that's how James was called in by the cops.
Right. And so the tracing of James was back to, was it a backpack that was discovered in the motel room? Or was it when the car was discovered and James's fingerprints would have been there from having sat in and you know, accompanied Father Ryan on trips?
Yeah, see, James's fingerprints were never found anywhere. The reason that the police, not anywhere. So the reason that the police focused on James is because they found a backpack in the father's apartment, and in the backpack was a photo album that had all these pictures of James and his family. And what James said is that Father Ryan, when they had spent the day talking at that bar, James, of course, had talked about him being an Apache Indian coming from this reservation. And so he had... Father Ryan had told him, come back and visit me and bring your photo album and let's talk about what it was like growing up as an Apache. So Father Ryan seemed to be, like I say, a genuinely curious, compassionate man. And so James brought the photo album, and they apparently talked about him growing up on this reservation. And at some point they were drinking and Father Ryan forced him into a sex act. James was so upset about it that he left his backpack and his photo album behind. So when the police came to Father Ryan's apartment 5-6 days later, they found it, and that's how he became the suspect number one.
James would have been a very young man back in 1981, Mike, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he was 25 or 27.
Yeah.
25.
And there were issues, you know, around drinking. And, you know, he had some mild brushes with the law. Is that fair to say?
He was a stone cold alcoholic. He had five, what we call DWIs, driving while intoxicated. And he had been arrested some 30 times for public intoxication. James was the town drunk.
And so probably a very lonely and sad figure. And then add to that the fact that he had probably experienced racism in the form against Native Americans, and him being a gay Apache Native American must have meant life was pretty tough.
I think so. That's the way that James talks about it. James is a very sensitive guy. And, you know, he grew up as an Apache, and Apaches, of course, are known for being brave warriors. And you know, he always struggled with that as a self-identity, because he was not this typical brave warrior. He was a homosexual, and he didn't have anybody to talk to about it. And so he eventually started drinking because he had no friends. He had no boyfriend. He was terrified of being rejected, so he became this alcoholic in his 20s, and that had a lot to do with all of his troubles.
And Mike, he then gets drunk one night and calls the police and confesses to the murder of Father Ryan.
Right. I mean, the police investigated James, and they said there's no proof that he did this. They found no evidence in the apartment that James had been, or in the hotel room that James had been there. Plus, he had 11 receipts showing that he was 200 miles away at the time of the murder. So, I mean, the police said, this guy has nothing to do with it. And they kept investigating. But in the meantime, James was getting more and more, you know, he didn't have a job. He was an alcoholic. And one night he was high on Quaaludes and a lot of alcohol, and he, feeling guilty about what he saw as his indirect causation of the murder, because he had hung out with the father the day before, and the father had driven him to New Mexico the day of his murder. James felt so guilty that, you know, high and drunk, he called up the cops and said, "I did it." And that was enough for the police to arrest him, even though he recanted immediately, said, "No, I didn't do it. I just like to cause trouble for the police." That was enough for him to get taken into the system.
And then that was it, Mike. In 1983, he's convicted. He's sentenced to 38 years. He's then freed on supervised release for being a model prisoner in 1995. Gets back into jail twice for parole violations. And that brings us right up now to November 2021. And what happened, Mike?
Usually police departments get rid of evidence in murder cases, because the once the appeals run out, the thought is we don't need to keep this here. And so back in 1993, the Odessa police got rid of all the evidence in this case. And, you know, James, in the meantime, had gotten out of prison. He had been paroled, but he was sent back a couple of times. And one of the fascinating things about James's case is, many people have told his story over the years. Many journalists, several documentaries have been done on his case. And lately, there have been a lot of podcasts done on his case. And there was one that came out last year called Crime Junkie.
Hi, Crime Junkies. I'm your host, Ashley Flowers.
And I'm Britt.
And today's story is one I kind of happened on while I was working on something completely different. And it's one of those cases that seems kind of open and shut.
And it was the whole story of the murder and about Father Ryan and James Reyes. And there were a couple of young people who listened to it in Texas. One was a young woman in Odessa, and one was a young man in Bryan, which is where Texas A&M is located. And they both told their dad about this. you know, here's this guy who was convicted on no evidence, and he had a solid alibi. And their dad happened to be the chief of police in Odessa, Texas, where the trial had taken place, you know, many years later. Their dad is the chief of police. And so he says, well, this doesn't make any sense to me. So he goes and he gets the file pulled and he reads it. And it doesn't make any sense to him that how this guy could have been convicted 40 years before on no evidence.
I believe it was probably the late fall, early winter of 2021, the case came to our attention again. And as I was reading through the case and I got to the end and I just felt, wow, there should be more. For this person to be convicted, I felt there should be more.
So he tells some of his cops to look into it. One of the cops goes and he actually finds some copies of some fingerprints that should have been destroyed back in 1993, but weren't. They run these fingerprints through a modern modern fingerprint database, and it, lo and behold, they find the fingerprints of three men, all of whom have criminal records, and one of whom had a really violent criminal record.
There were holes in the case that just didn't fit. Does it make sense that there's fingerprints at the crime scene, but his fingerprints aren't at the crime scene, right? It doesn't make sense that the crime scene is pretty violent, but yet he had very minimal, there was like no injuries on Mr. Reyes. I mean, those things just don't fit.
The cops go to the DA, who are the DA are the people in Texas who prosecute the cases. And the DA was like, well, I don't know what to do about this. He had gone to law school with a woman named Allison Clayton, who is one of the people who run the Innocence Project of Texas. And he calls up Allison and says, we don't know what to do with this. Do you know what to do with this? And Allison, who has helped exonerate six men, says, I absolutely know what to do with this. Let me help James Reyes.
From the moment I got into the substance of the case, I was wondering how on earth this man ever got convicted in the first place.
So they all get together and start working together, which is very unusual in Texas. Usually the Innocence Project is fighting with the police and the district attorneys. But here, the district attorney and the police are cooperating with the Innocence Project, and they all want to see something good happen for James. It's actually quite unusual.
It is an incredible story, and James always pleaded his innocence, Mike. In your article, you write that he has the mantra, I know in my heart I did not kill Father Patrick Ryan.
Yeah, he's written that down on a piece of paper. It's in his, it's in his tiny little room where he lives. And it's, I mean, to me, he said those words to me several times, and it's something that he says to other people. And it's like this really emotional thing that this guy clings to. He knows, he's always said he didn't do it, but he's been ignored for so long by the state of Texas that it's almost like he has to say it as a mantra. But James has always, except for that one time when he made a drunken, drugged out confession, every other time it's been, no, I didn't do it.
Mike, what's the feeling there? Is there a sense that the conviction will be overturned, that James's innocence will be properly recognized?
That's very hard to say. I mean, the court system in Texas, like in many places, is set up to not second guess, to not overturn mistakes. That's just the way legal systems are set up. So you have to be very practical about your expectations. What is fascinating about this case is that both we have an adversarial system, the prosecutor and the defense. In this case, the adversarial system is a cooperative system. Both sides are working together. And this case is just so obvious, it was just obvious. So a terrible mistake was made that, I am certainly hopeful. I'm certainly hopeful that his case will get turned around. But I've seen many cases that drag out for a long time in the courts because the courts are very reluctant to say, hey, we made a mistake. That's just kind of the way it is in Texas.
Tell me, Mike, has there been any communication over the years from Father Ryan's family here in Doon in Limerick?
I do not know the answer to that. I know that one of the things that James says is he thinks about Father Ryan and his family all the time. I know he had a brother for a long, I don't know if his brother is still around, but James wants to get justice for them. He says this, and I believe it. I don't know if he's been in communication with them, though.
And Mike, what's your sense of everything that's going on there at the moment? Are we any closer to finding out who actually really killed Father Ryan?
Well, you know, we're going to have to wait for the full story for, you know, until the next stage. The next stage in Texas is if James's lawyers have filed a writ of habeas corpus, and what they would do next, if the judge agrees, is hold a hearing. And at this hearing, they would be able to bring out all the evidence that the Odessa police have. And the Odessa police have opened this now as a cold case. So they have detectives working on this exclusively. They have three men, the fingerprints of three men that they found in that motel room. Like I said, one of them has a violent history. His fingerprint was found on the cruise control knob of Father Ryan's car when it was located, as well as on a stolen credit card. There is a really good chance that if they do have a hearing, we're going to find out details on these men. And, you know, maybe there are going to be other bits of evidence that tie them to that night. You know, maybe an eyewitness, or maybe, you know, one of them said something to a family member. Right now, all we have is fingerprints placing them in the motel. So we don't absolutely know, but everybody is very hopeful that at the next step, we'll find out who these guys were and if, in fact, they killed Father Ryan.
And my thanks to Mike Hall, executive editor at Texas Monthly. I'm Siobhan Maguire, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was produced and researched by myself, recorded by Gavin Hennessy, with sound by John Smith. Archive clips from NewsWest 9, RTE and independent.ie. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to like, follow and leave us a review.